For the last few months, we have been singing this fantastic song called Death Was Arrested. There's a song behind the song, a story behind the song. We won't get in. Death Was Arrested. Some of you know the song. The great news is we've produced an incredible, incredible version of this song, and we're going to release it on iTunes. We've released a lot of music on iTunes, CDs, and some of you purchased those. But we're going to try to do something really neat because we feel like Adele is just getting too much attention, okay? So what we're going to do this Friday, December 4th, we're going to release this single on iTunes. And here's what I'd like for you to do. It's $1.29. Is that right? $1.29. Okay. If you don't have it next week, if you see me, I'll reimburse you. We would like, basically, bottom line, we'd like everybody in all of our churches next Friday to buy this song on iTunes. Okay. Even if you don't normally do iTunes, just, you know, find somebody, sign you up, just buy the song. And here's why. Because this, when our music goes high on iTunes charts, it helps our musicians. I know you love our musicians. They make a living actually playing music and traveling, doing music and writing music. And so this is an opportunity for us to say thank you to our musicians. But not only that, it's an opportunity to take a fantastic song and get it some attention so some other churches will play it in church. And so since we're going to release it as a single instead of a CD, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to tell everybody, on Friday, let's just all buy this song as a thank you. Plus, it's a fantastic song. You're going to love the arrangement. So Friday, December 4th, iTunes, $1.29. Let's all purchase Death Was Arrested, make it a famous song, and do something for our great musicians. All right? Now, that's all. That's it. Not a lot of energy around that, but Friday, there'll be a lot of energy around the song. So just make a note to yourself. Okay. Do what? Oh, I thought you were talking to me. Sorry. Maybe you were. Today, what I want to do, I want to talk about, for a few minutes, just about this word right here, invitation. And I've mentioned for the last couple weeks that I was going to tell you the story about how Sandra and I met. And then earlier this week, she said, what are you going to say? And I said, well, I'm just going to tell the story about how we met.
But here's the thing. He has as many versions of this story as times that he tells it.
So she wasn't sure which version I was going to tell, so she invited herself
up
here.
So
to tag team preach or whatever we call this.
Is that what it is? Okay. Well, so we have three kids. And so Andy, as they were growing up, he would constantly say, hey, have I told y'all how your mom and I met? And they'd be like, oh, Dad, yes. And there, it was different every time. There was one time I was a waitress on roller skates. And then many times it involved a superhero. And then there was,
there was a pirate version.
Pirate
I was a pirate.
Version.
Yeah.
So,
but I wasn't going to do that. I was just going to tell them the real story. So
clearly, for the sake of accuracy, I decided I should be involved in the telling this time.
So here's how we met. Try to make it
interesting. So here's how we met. Okay. So I was a student at Georgia Tech, and Andy was, thank you, Andy, I was a student at Georgia Tech. Gary Niebuhr was a tennis coach at Tech, and we had a Bible study every Monday night. A girlfriend of mine, Laura Marbit, who later married Mark Price, some of y'all know the basketball player Mark, Laura invited me to attend this Bible study. And so I attended, got involved, loved it. It was great. We had it every Monday night. Gary Niebuhr was the tennis coach at the time, and he was a friend of mine, and he was a friend of Andy's. And he, there was a week that the teacher wasn't going to be there. There were actually several weeks. And so Gary decided to invite Andy to come and fill in for this Bible study teacher when she wasn't there.
And he actually invited, it was on Monday night, and he would invite me. And I had something every Monday night where I taught some high school students in a home. And so he would invite me. I'd say, I can't. I have something. Then he would invite me again. I can't. So he invited me. I finally said, Gary, I can't ever go. I have something every single Monday night. And he said, well, what if we adjust the schedule to make it work? And so he was just relentless inviting me to speak at this Bible study.
That's right. So we moved it to later. Andy came and he spoke. And of course, it was the best message I had ever, ever, ever heard. It was. It really was.
Good.
So it was great. I can still tell you today what it was about. It was so good. So the next day, on Tuesday, I was doing some volunteer work in the Athletic Association, and Gary came down from the tennis floor, and he said, so what'd you think about Andy? And I said, it was the best message I've ever heard. And so I started telling Gary the things that I learned and just how great it was. And Gary said, no, I mean, what'd you think about Andy? And I said, well, how old is he?
Because, that's why I should have told the story.
Because I was, you know, barely 20, and he was out of college, out of seminary, back working for his dad. So I asked Gary how old he was, and then I thought, well, I would go out with him at least once because my grandmother loves his dad, and I could say, Grandmama, guess who I went out on a date with?
It takes.
So anyway, so Gary, then I think began.
Yeah, then he said, Hey, remember, did you meet a girl named Sandra Walker? I'm like, it was a Georgia Tech. There were just two girls, okay?
It's not true.
Well, this was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
And there really were, there weren't any girls at the Bible study. I would have remembered. But anyway, so I said, there were two girls with blonde hair. Was she one of them? He said, maybe. And so he said, well, you should call her and ask her. I'm going to give you her number. I said, I'm not going to do that. That's so tacky. Remember me? I'm the Bible study teacher. You know, I want to go on a date. I'm like, no. And he was relentless. He just said, you got to ask her out. You got to ask her out. And then he kept giving me her number. I'd lose it. He'd give it to me again. True story. And then I finally called, really just to get Gary to leave me alone. And it was between semesters. Yeah, she had changed dorms. So I said, wrong number, Gary. He got me her new number. It was just, he just stayed on.
We're so grateful.
I know.
We are grateful for Gary.
Yeah, I am.
We really are. We really. So he invited me out on a date, picked me up at the dorm, which was cute, you know, 28-year-old picking up a dorm, little girl in the dorm. But anyway.
Say that anyway.
So we went out on a date, and I went to a party where he knew everyone, and I knew no one, and that was awesome. And so we had a good time. It was a great day.
And then I kept inviting her out.
That's right. Yeah. Kept on inviting me, and I kept saying yes. And then about a year later, should I tell our engagement story?
Nope. A year later, I invited her to marry me.
So here's our engagement story.
And she said yes, and we got married. Thank you.
So we had been dating about a year. And so we went to this really nice dinner. You know, it was awesome, just beautiful dinner, flowers, all that. And then we went, and we went to his parents' house, and we were sitting in the living room just talking, and all of a sudden it was like the blood starts draining from his face, and he's fiddling around trying to find something in his pocket, and he gets down on one knee, and I thought he was going to pass out. And so I said, darling, you really don't have to do this.
It was so romantic.
It was awesome. He really loves it. If you have like an Empire State Building kind of engagement story or something, he loves hearing other people's really awesome.
I hate those guys. Yeah.
So
well, I was nervous. I mean, it's a big deal. Get married.
It was.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful. And it all started with one invitation. Yeah. Laura invited me to a Bible study. Yep. And then Gary invited you to speak
over
in the Bible study
a
number of times. And then you invited me out on a
After
first date.
He invited me to invite you out over and over. Yeah.
An invitation.
It's all about invitation.
So it all started with an invitation. You never know what hangs in the balance of an invitation. And that's the real story of how we met.
Thank you. So what is the point of all that, you say? The point is this, that at every major intersection in your life, there's been an invitation of sorts. In fact, you could actually tell your story through the lens and through the filter of invitations. In fact, don't think too much about this because this is kind of weird, but you are in this world because of an invitation. Somewhere, and you're coming into this world, part of that story is somebody invited somebody to something somewhere, okay? Hopefully it was on a date and a whole bunch of dates and hopefully into a wedding, but there were invitations. Everybody got to this world through a series of invitations. And the flip side is this. Some of your, you know, some of the best things in your life were the result of an invitation. Some of your greatest regrets were the result of an invitation, right? You wish you hadn't called him back, called her back, texted her back. You wish you hadn't gone. You wish you had said no, right? So invitations are powerful, powerful things. Actually, invitations are life-changing things. In fact, an invitation can change everything. In fact, again, as you think back through your life, an invitation can change everything. For all of us, at some point along the way, there was an invitation that we accepted or said no to. And looking back, it really was a pivotal point in our life. In many cases, it was a defining moment. Now, here's what I want to talk about for our remaining few minutes together today, because this is such a big deal. You, even though I don't know each of you, obviously, every single one of you, those of you at our campuses, at our churches, who are watching online, every single one of you, you have the power. You have the power to change the trajectory of someone's entire life. You have the power to change the trajectory of someone's entire life through a single or through a series of invitations. You have the power, no matter what your education level is, no matter what your network of friends is, no matter what you have or don't have, you have the power to change the trajectory of someone's life through a single or through a series of invitations. And for me, I've actually dedicated my life to making it possible for you to change the trajectory of somebody's life through a single or through a series of invitations. And so have a whole lot of people at all of our churches. And let me tell you what I mean by that. 20-something years ago, 22, 23, 24 years ago, I was working for my dad at a great church, but it was a church like most churches that was designed by church people for church people. Designed by church people for church people. So if you were a church people, it was the best church in town. The problem was, when I would want to invite friends that weren't church people or had a bad experience in church or didn't know anything about church, when I would invite them to church, which was very rare, I would sit there and squirm the whole time because our church was so weird. Not for church people. It was a fabulous church for church people. But if you weren't a church people, our church was weird because churches create, you know, kind of a church culture. But the church that I worked in and grew up in and loved, it was my home church. The church that I grew up in and loved was perfectly designed for the results we were getting. We were the best church in town for people who wanted to go to church. But I was working with high school students, and there was something in me that thought we can do better and it needs to be better. And we would create environments for high school kids, and their parents would come and adults would stand in the back. And I knew what they were thinking. They were thinking, why can't big church be like this? Why can't big church be a little bit more engaging, a little bit more fun, a little bit less churchy? And so then in 1991, I was invited by the deacons of our church to go out to a warehouse district outside of Atlanta, right on 285. This is, you know, years ago, and start a second campus for my dad's church in a warehouse. And they told me, you're not going to have this, you're not going to have that. We can't provide a choir. You can't. We won't be able to have it. It'll be really raw. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I could not wait. And we went out there and started doing church in a warehouse on concrete floors with scaffolding. And it was just so raw and it was so real. And after the first Sunday I walked out with Sandra, and I said, that's what I want to do the rest of my life. I want to be in an environment where we can clear away anything that gets between a person and their heavenly father, a person and reconnecting or connecting for the first time with God. And so in 1995, a few years later, we left there and launched North Point Community Church. And from the very beginning, our church, our mission wasn't to have another church. Atlanta did not need another church. Our mission was to create a different kind of church, a church where unchurched people would love to attend. Not a church for unchurched people, but a church environment, a church where people who were seekers or starters or returners, this is the language we use, somebody who was looking and asking questions, somebody who was ready to start their faith journey, or someone who had been bumped out of church or had a bad church experience and was returning, where seekers, starters, and returners could begin to connect with God in a real and authentic way and get their questions answered. Environments that we would begin to call irresistible environments, where all the unnecessary stuff was removed. Appealing settings where we created environments that were appealing and people felt comfortable in. Engaging communication. If somebody was going to stand on a stage with a microphone, whether it was for children or high school kids or for adults, we wanted engaging communication and we wanted helpful content. Because we believed all these years that following Jesus will make a person's life better regardless of what they believe about Jesus. And following Jesus will make you better at life. And we knew from what the New Testament taught that the men and women who followed Jesus eventually came to believe that he was the Son of God. But they started following long before they came and recognized that reality, before they came to that conclusion or recognized that reality. We wanted to create environments where kids could not wait to be there on Sunday morning, even if it meant having to wake their parents up to get them there. And maybe most important of all, we wanted to create environments where the next generation of adults, where high school students and middle school students and college students would stay so connected with their Heavenly Father and understand their faith in such a way that when they became adults, they would not wander from it, but they would be the next generation of church leaders and they would be more excited about Jesus and more excited about the church than the generation that had come along before them. And we didn't know if it would work, but that's what we wanted to do. And so we started our church. There was a passage of scripture that has hung in my office for many years, and it comes out of Acts 15. And in Acts 15, I've told you this story before. In Acts 15, it was the first church business meeting. And the issue, it was about 20 years after the resurrection. And the problem was the Jewish leaders were arguing that Gentiles, that's most of us non-Jewish people, that Gentiles had to become Jews before they could become Christians because Jesus was Jewish. And they saw Jesus and his ministry as an extension of Judaism. Another group came along and said, no, Christianity is not an extension of Judaism. Judaism was like a cocoon that birthed and created the context, was the context and created the potential for Christianity. So there was this argument. And at the end of the day, the church leaders, about 20 years after the resurrection, concluded that men and women did not have to become Jewish first, that God had used the Jewish nation to birth this new thing that was not simply for a nation. It wasn't regional. It wasn't geographic. It was for the entire world. And in that meeting, James, the brother of Jesus, stood up and made a statement that was really has been a guiding principle for us from the very beginning. Here's what James said. He said, it is my judgment. This is in the middle of a meeting. It is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. In other words, we should make it as easy as possible for people who are interested in, for people who are giving up their pagan ways, for people who are looking for answers. We should make it as easy as possible. And anything that is unnecessarily difficult, we should remove. And so from the very beginning, we wanted to create churches that unchurched people loved to attend. And that you could attend here as long as you wanted without changing anything you believed until you were ready. But that you would find yourself around people who were fantastic people and that the content would always be helpful. So for the first 3.5 years, we met every other Sunday night and rented facilities. We eventually bought a piece of property, borrowed some money. Some people were generous. We built our very first building. In fact, if you're with me here at North Point today, this was our very first auditorium. I remember walking in here thinking, what have we done? This place is huge. What if nobody comes? But boy, did they come. Because we were the only church in our part of the city. In fact, we were one of the only churches in our part of the country. We were one of the few churches in the country that was designed not by church people for church people. What was designed by church people for people who were far from God or interested in God, for seekers, starters, and returners. And hundreds of people came. And then thousands of people came. And then we built a second auditorium and people continued to come. And once a year back in those days, some of you remember this, I would actually get up once a year and I would preach my go away, we have too many people sermon. And it went kind of like this. We would say this, look, if you're a Christian and you're just here because you like the music, if you're a Christian and you just like our church better than your other church, if you're a Christian and you never plan to engage in our mission, which is to lead people into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ, if you don't plan to ever invest in a relationship and invite someone to church, if you're not on mission with us, we can't afford you. We didn't build this place for you. I don't want to raise money and create empty seats for people who just want a better church or a better church experience. That's not what we're about. So either get in the game or get out of here, you know? And nobody would leave. They would just get in the game and invite more people. Then the idea for multi-site came along. And we renovated a grocery store and spent unbelievable amounts of money to make that thing work in Buckhead. And thanks to that group of pioneers way back there, Buckhead Church exists today. Bought 2.5 acres, built a 4-story building. It went on and on and on and on. And God has just given us so many opportunities. And I'm surrounded by such great people. But we have grown primarily through invitations. People just like you who understood, I don't have to be a Bible scholar. I don't have to have all the answers. I don't need to be a marriage counselor. I don't have to be the best parent in the world. I don't have to be the best person in the world. But I can invite someone. I can say, come and see. Come and see. I can't answer your questions. Come and see. I know you. I don't know about all those things in the Old Testament. Come and see. No, I don't know about that either. Just come and see. And as people have been a part of what we're doing, God has just done that thing that happens when people who are seekers, starters, and returners, when people who are far from God but want to be close to God, when people who have been beaten up by sin and are facing the consequences of sin, when they come and they are among people who are following Jesus, something special happens. And it's happened here over and over and over. And some of you get this. Some of you get this because once upon a time, you were unchurched. You're that person. In fact, you were here because somebody invited you. You can still remember the first time you pulled up in one of our parking lots. You can remember the first time somebody invited you and you said, no, no, no. And just like Gary Niebuhr kept inviting me to teach at that Bible study and kept inviting me to ask Sandra out, they were just relentless. And maybe 2 or 3 people invited you to one of our churches. And finally you said, okay, I'm going to go one time so I can get these people to shut up already, you know? Or maybe it was your husband who said, honey, let's just try it. You know, maybe it was your kids. Hey, we want to go to, you know, so-and-so's church, whatever it was. You understand. And it was too big and you don't like mega church and it's all those people and they're going to expect you to raise your hand or fill something out. And you just weren't ready. You didn't want to do that. You were nervous. You weren't sure your kids would like it. And then you got here and you began to acquire a taste for it. And you didn't believe everything we believed, but it was helpful and it was wholesome and it was positive. And it's like, I think I'm going to go back for more of that. You understand better than most of us the power of an invitation. Now, some of you don't understand this at all. It's not your fault. You're like me. You grew up in church. And you moved to this area of town and you were looking for a church and you found us and you like us and we're so glad you found us and we're so glad that you like us. Or somebody told you about our church or something happened in your church, but you're church people, you're like me. And you were just looking for the best church you could find in your community. And honestly, I think we're the best church you can find in any community, but every pastor should feel that way about their church. And you're here, but here's the thing. You can imagine what it would be like to be an unchurched person being invited to church, but you haven't experienced it. And if you haven't experienced it, you are not, it's not your fault. You can't possibly be as tuned in to why we do what we do as if you had been an unchurched person or if you were somebody who invited somebody to church with you. Because as difficult as this may be to convince you, until you have seen us through the eyes and heard us through the ears of a seeker, starter, or returner, until you have seen us through the eyes and heard us through the ears of a seeker, starter, or returner, you haven't seen and you haven't heard. There is nothing more formative in understanding what we do than when you attend one of our churches with somebody who is unchurched, against church, used to go to church, or is against church because of a bad church experience, and you finally talk them into coming. And some of you can remember the first time you did that. You experienced us in a completely different way. Parking was more important. Organization was more important. Checking kids in was more important. You're thinking, man, I hope whoever's preaching gets it right today. I hope we don't sing too long and I hope we don't sing too short. I hope it's just right and I hope they sing my favorite song and I hope there's a baptism, but I hope it's a good baptism. I hope it's not some, person with some story nobody understands. All of a sudden, everything we do became so important to you. And for the very first time, you understand why we do what we do. And if you have never had that experience, as much as you may love what we do, it's not your fault. You don't fully get what we do. And it is extremely important that you get what we do. A couple months ago now, Sandra and I had a couple over for dinner. And Meg, the woman that was married to the guy in the couple, she told us her story. She said, you know what? She said, I got to tell you about inviting my mom and my sister to church. She said, my mom, they're from a different country. And she said, we hardly even know any Christians. When I say unchurched, I mean, it's not like we're against it. We just don't, nobody where I'm from even knows about it. We don't talk about it. It's just like something that exists for some people it's just a non-thing. So when they heard that Dave and I were real involved in church, that's just like a little bit freaky to them. She said, so my mom and my sister came. My mom came first. The next week, my sister came. They were going to stay with us a couple of weeks because it's so expensive, travel halfway around the world. She said, so we brought my mom to church. And you're right. It's like I'm looking at everything differently. Like, is she going to like this? Is she going to like that? We sit down. The music starts. And, I'm sitting there singing, but I'm standing there singing, kind of watching her look around. And we sit down and we start the collection. And my mom says, what's that? And she said, well, this is how we collect money. And she said, my mom got her purse out. And I said, no, mom, you don't need to give anything. And she said, are you kidding? I would pay for this. Now, we hadn't gotten to the sermon yet, okay? She said, I would pay for this. Now, let me tell you, laugh, but I want you to think about something because we're all a bunch of church people, all right? Where else can you go to a facility like the one you're sitting in for free, sit shoulder to shoulder in a comfortable seat, and have music and production like you have every single weekend and not buy a ticket? The answer is no place. So as an unchurched person, it's like, somebody had to pay for this, and this is worth something. I'm more than happy to give. So then they go home. They went out to Connections, and her mom bought a bunch of the music. Then they go home, and then her sister comes into town. And she said, I sat there and listened to my unchurched mom talk to my unchurched sister about how great our church was. And she said, I kind of got it. I saw it in a completely different way. And then the next weekend they came and brought her sister. Her sister loved it as well. I'm just telling you, until you've had that experience, you can't fully get it. And it's not your fault. It's just the nature of what we do and the nature of the fact that so many of us are church people. So here's the thing. The key, and I don't have time to convince you of this, but this is absolutely true. The key for us, the key to us remaining a church that unchurched people love to attend, the key to us remaining a church that unchurched people love to attend is you and your willingness to invite your unchurched friends and family and neighbors And here's why. Because inviters critique and complain correctly. Inviters critique the right way, and inviters complain about the right things. Church people critique incorrectly, and they complain about all the wrong things. Now, I'll just tell you a little bit behind the scenes stuff at Church World. Sometimes we get a lot of email. We get a lot of letters. And we read them. We go, church person, throw it away. We don't care. We care about them, but we're not. This is a church person. They are so used to having everything their way with church person. Then we get certain complaints. And we're like, this is somebody who's on mission with us. We're all about that. That's the filter. And the only way to keep us right on target and focused on what we need to do is for you to be an inviter, because inviters critique the right way and they complain about the right things. See, if your thing is, well, we need to have this, you know, our churches have like the greatest preaching in the world, and why don't we invite so-and-so, and why don't we invite so-and-so, and, you know, I listen to so-and-so, and, you know, when are we going to go through the book of Revelation? Never. You know, when are we going to do all this stuff? It's because you're thinking like a church person, okay? People who are inviting people, they do not think that way. They want it to be short. They want it to be practical. They want the cookies on the bottom shelf. They want the low rung on the ladder. They want their guests to walk out and say, wow, that was helpful. Wow, I'm so glad I came. That's the win. Not, I never heard that before. I've been in church 25 years. I have never heard that before. That is not our goal. Our goal isn't to be unique. Our goal isn't to just say the same things over and over in different ways to keep you interested. Our goal is to create churches that unchurched people connect to, and the inviters get that. The other area where you need to understand that is this with our music. Because we love music. That's why we do nights of worship, because we love singing. But you know what? When you stand shoulder to shoulder with a 35-year-old or 45-year-old guy, and it's his first time, and he didn't know any of these songs, you're hoping for 1.5 songs, one would be better. No matter how much you like music, because he's standing there like, okay, that lady has a question. Okay, is this like Q&A? Like, we're singing, and that guy has two questions. What's up with these people? Now, you laugh. Because you're church people, let me ask you something. Where else in culture do you go stand shoulder to shoulder with people and sing at a screen? I'll tell you. Concerts. But you bought a ticket and you already knew all the songs. For somebody to walk in here for free and stand shoulder to shoulder and for us to sing 3 or 4 or 5 songs, I'm telling you, it's just weird. Let me tell you how weird it is, okay? There's a young lady who goes to Buckhead Church, and I heard her tell her story the other day, and it was phenomenal. And here's her story. She got invited, you know, she didn't, you know, it's a wonderful story. So finally she decides, okay, I'm going to go to Buckhead Church. Not going to go by myself. So she invited a friend. He picks her up. They're on their way. They get there. Service starts, and it's like, boom, you know, great music, lights. And she says to him, it's a concert. It's like a concert. Then the words come up on the screen. He says, no, it's karaoke. You've never thought one single time in your life karaoke when those words came up there, because you're church people. I'm church people. But where else do you go and stare at a screen and they put the words up there and you sing along? My friends, that's karaoke, okay? That's what that is. It's never dawned on you. Because in a minute, I mean, so quickly, we become insider, and we become, if we're not careful, we become insider focused. Now, here's the thing. I don't want us to be the best churches in our communities. That's never been the goal. I don't want us to be the biggest churches. I want us to be the place that when you meet that person that's hit a roadblock, when you meet that person that's struggling, that couple that's struggling, they're, you know, they've got a prodigal child and they're not sure how to pray and they're not sure about prayer and they just ask you to think about them, you know, in their difficult time. We want to be that place where you think, you know what, you need to come to my church. Because they may not be talking about the subject you're wrestling with, but you need to be with the people at my church, because I'm just telling you, just come and see. That's who we are. And the only way for us to stay there is for you to engage, because I'm just telling you, okay? If you don't engage with us, and I'm not saying you haven't, but if you don't engage with us, you will complain about all the wrong things and you will critique us in all the wrong ways. And if we get enough complaints and critiques, we may start shifting in order to keep you happy. And then we'll just be a big version of the church that some of us grew up in. And you know what? You don't want that. I know you don't. You wouldn't be here. So here's why I'm saying all this right now. We're coming up on the two prime invite opportunities. Christmas in January. okay? There are baby Jesuses out in front of people's yards. If you can't talk about Jesus at Christmas, there's no, you just can't do it, okay? So this is the easiest time of the year to invite someone to church. They almost expect you to invite them to church, okay? So starting next week, I'm starting a Christmas series for 3 weeks, so it's a 3-week Christmas series. So, and I've kind of set them up so that each one's a little bit of a standalone. So anytime somebody shows up, it's gonna make sense. We're gonna do that for you. And then January, everybody's starting over, starting the year over. January is the other perfect time to invite someone to attend church with you. And I just don't want you to miss these opportunities. Now, in addition to friends and neighbors and people that you work with, and those are the difficult ones, because you kind of build up your nerve and pray for me, I'm going to invite her to church, like they're going to freak out. We make such a big deal out of it. Half the time they go, sure. It's like, sure, but I got four reasons I was going to give you. You don't just say, sure, say, okay. So we make it a bigger deal than it is. And for many people, they need to be invited about 10 times, okay? So we get that. But in addition to those sort of the people that we would typically invite, I want you, especially this Christmas season, I want you to listen out for what we call the three little knots, okay? The three little knots are these. I'm not in church, not in church, not going well, not prepared for. Not in church. Well, we're not in church right now, or we just moved here. We're not in church, or we don't go to church, or, not going well, but boy, things at home aren't going well. Things with my son aren't going well. Things at work aren't going well. My wife we just got a call from her doctor. Things aren't going well, and not prepared for. We just had our first child, just took on our new job. We're empty nesters, or we just put our first grader in school, or just put our first kid in school. Just not prepared for. Anytime you hear one of those, even with total strangers, you just say, really? Really? Well, you should come to my church this Sunday. Really? You should come to church, my church this Sunday. Not church with me. These may be strangers. That may be appropriate, may not be. But even if it's not with you or meet you there, really? You should come to my church this Sunday. Let's just say this together. But when we say really, we're going to be like, really? Like, really? You're not in church? Really? It's not going well? Really? Okay, ready? Really? Well, you should come to this Sunday. Doesn't matter who's preaching. Doesn't matter what the series is. You should just invite them. Now, about almost a year ago now, Sandra and I started doing this. We kind of make it a game. It's just anytime, anywhere, even overhearing other conversations. It's really fun. You say, excuse me, I overheard what you said. You know what? You should come to my church this Sunday. Now, that used to be weird for me because I'm the preacher and I would kind of freak out about, you should come to my church this Sunday because I'm the speaker. And I thought, Andy, that is so stupid, because the beauty, if I can use the word magic, the beauty and the magic of what you do week in and week out really has very little to do with who's standing up here or what we're talking about. It's these fabulous environments that you create and pay for and volunteer in. It's these fabulous environments where kids come and they think, we can't wait to come back. So I decided I'm going to quit being embarrassed about, inviting people because I'm the preacher. I would invite people, but we've gotten really bold. In fact, I think I told some of you the story where Sandra was checking out. She was down in Buckhead and she was returning something, and the girl in front of her was buying something, and she was talking to the person running the desk, with the cash, we don't have cash registers anymore, the cash computer, what do we call it? The checkout station, checkout, yeah. She was checking out. Okay, anyway, everybody's checking everybody out. So anyway, so the lady that was running the checkout center, we'll just call it the checkout center, was telling the lady that was buying something about her boyfriend. Things are going bad with her boyfriend. Maybe they knew each other. Sandra was listening. She said, you couldn't help it over here. My boyfriend this, my boyfriend that. So Sandra, she said, I was probably 20 years older than this young lady. She said, when I got up there, I said, I'm sorry, I couldn't help but overhear you, but I just want to say something. You need to break up with him. He is not good for you, and you need to come to my church Sunday at Buckhead Church. It's like, break up, she added one. You need to break up with him, okay? But you need to go to my church. And she said, Buckhead Church. Now, this is what's going to happen because you guys have done such a great job. She said, Buckhead Church, I have some friends that go there. Another guy says, oh, yeah, I've been there before. Next thing you know, they're talking about Buckhead Church. She says, I'll do that. And I don't know whether she did or not. But, we just decided if things aren't going well, something new going on in somebody's life, somebody's not at church, we're just going to invite them. Now, imagine what would happen in our communities if that happened. And we're not trying to get our church big. Hello, we're big. In fact, we're the largest church in the country, according to one magazine. And it's like, no, and we don't even celebrate that because that's never been the goal. It's to create churches that unchurched people love to attend. And that's only going to happen if we continue to be people who are concerned about people who are far from God. Now, let me ask you a question and I'm done. Do you know what hangs in the balance of your willingness to extend an invitation? And the answer is no. And do you know what hangs in the balance of your resistance to offering or extending an invitation? The answer is no. But here's what we do know. Every single defining moment in your life, for the most part, maybe every single defining moment in your life, there was an invitation involved. And you have no idea what hangs in the balance to just sort of insert yourself in a conversation or to finally invite that neighbor or to finally get up the courage or ask for the fourth time. You have no idea what hangs in the balance. But if you are a part of one of our churches and somebody invited you, you're not mad at that person. You are grateful for that person. And there is somebody in your future who's going to be grateful for you because you took the time and you had the courage to invite. Because here's the thing. This is amazing. You have the power. You have the power to change the trajectory of someone's entire life and the life of their children and perhaps the life of their grandchildren simply by inviting or through a series of invitations. And by inviting, you have the power to ensure that we are always a group of churches that are designed with unchurched people in mind, that we continue to create services and environments with unchurched people in mind. As long as you're inviting, you're going to critique us and you're going to complain. You're going to critique us the right way and complain about the right things. But in the meantime, you have no idea what or who hangs in the balance of your willingness and your courage to invite, because here's what we know. An invitation can change everything.